Okay. All right. We're getting to it. We're doing it. I'm limping down to the end of the year. I really am. I'm just like slogging through. Like my content has slowed to a crawl. The podcast might like getting it out has slowed to a crawl. Everything has just like the gears have slowed down as I'm just sort of slithering over the finish line of 2022. This is the last show. This is it. The last show of 2022. And hopefully I'll have some new year energy in a week or two. I don't think I'll do a podcast next week. I'm going to be out of town directing a music video, and I'm going to be very busy, and I don't think I'm going to have time to do a podcast. So hopefully in that time I can recharge, I can get that project done and filmed, and then I can be like, okay, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be back and doing content regularly again, and I'll feel refreshed and recharged, hopefully. That's the hope. But at any rate, here it is. The podcast it's releasing when it's releasing. And I think I'm getting it out before the new year. So we did it, right? Great. And hey, right before the end of the year, we got maybe the best story of the entire year. That Andrew Tate, Greta Thunberg story, Toon Bear. I heard someone say that online. Thunberg? Bear? Is that how you pronounce it in German? Toon Bear. I don't speak German. I don't know. I have heard that it's Toon, not Thune, but I heard someone say Bear instead of Berg. I've been saying Thunberg. I don't know. But that story is maybe the best story of the year. And it squeaked in. It's kind of like how Hollywood waits to release all the best movies of the year in December because they want people to like remember them when they're voting for, you know, Golden Globes and Oscars and things like that. This story squeaked in right at the buzzer. And what a gift to all of us, because I really feel like Andrew Tate wasn't a thing until 2022. All of the Andrew Tate news happened this year. Like there were probably MMA fans who knew who Andrew Tate was before 2022, and like a niche crowd who knew who Andrew Tate was, but he really rose to prominence as like the king douchebag in 2022. Like 2022 is when he made his mark on culture as like, oh, think of the worst, shittiest person imaginable. Think of the douchiest, worst person you can think of, and times that by 50. Like take it to a level where like a comic book movie is writing like a cartoonishly over the top villain who's like an over the top cartoonish caricature of a douchebag, and that's Andrew Tate, and the world was introduced on a bigger scale to like, oh, this is the alpha douche. He's all about being an alpha, but like he really is the alpha douche. Like he is the benchmark for what all terrible, toxic, douchey men are trying to be, and his profile was made really prominent this past year, and he became a big talking point about like, should we allow this guy to be out in public saying all the awful stuff he's saying and doing all of the awful things he's doing? And then it was revealed that he was probably human trafficking with his brother, that they were having people who were, you know, taking his classes on how to be an alpha douche like him and how to have 30 Bugattis, and they were taking his online courses, and he was having people who were like his head disciples marry women and then farm those women out for sex work. And he was essentially like king pimp of this sex trafficking ring, and they've been looking for him, and he gave himself up in this video. So here, if you don't know the story somehow, if you somehow have not heard the story, I'll give you a quick recap. Andrew Tate, for no reason, just out of the blue, decided to tweet at Greta Thunberg. Greta Thunberg, who's the 19-year-old climate activist from Germany who made waves several years ago for speaking at the UN, and she's been, you know, very prominent since she was like 13. But he just randomly was like, I'm gonna pick a fight with this kid, with this child for no reason. He was like, hey, Greta Thunberg, check me out. I got 30 Bugattis and I got all these different cars and I create so many toxic emissions into the air. What are you going to do about it? Like basically bragging about like his carbon footprint and how he alone, you know, was pushing forward climate change. Like I said, like, he's a cartoon villain. He is a comic book villain. He's like, hey, Greta Thunberg, you can't stop me from pushing forward climate change. What are you going to do? Like, he really is like a mustache-twisting, monocle-wearing, dirigible-writing cartoon villain. I'll keep telling you this story, but like, he really is such a villain, and you'll hear why. So he tweets at her and he says, what are you going to do about it? And he goes, tell me where I can email you, and I'll email you even a bigger list of all of the carbon emissions that I make on a daily basis. And so Greta Thunberg responded and said, yeah, sure, you can email me that at smalldickenergy@getalife.com. Basically just roasting him back. His tweet, when he tweeted at her, got like 120,000 likes, something like that. Disappointing. That's a disappointing number. It's disappointing that there are that many awful dudes out there in the world that are like, hell yeah, Tate roasted her, dude. Tate got her. Tate started beef with a random 19-year-old on the internet, and he got her, dude, because he's an alpha. So it's a bummer that his tweet got so many likes. Her tweet got... It's at like 3.5 million likes right now. She just decimated this guy, just absolutely decimated him into oblivion, just completely ratioed him. His only explanation that he could come up with was that we live in the Matrix and that bots, that Twitter farmed out bots to come and like her tweet to make him look bad. I love it when people like Tate do this. Like, it's like when people say like they don't believe that the 2020 election was real because they can't believe that 81 million people voted for Joe Biden. That number is just like too absurd. And I get it, because like I think that 75 million people voting for Donald Trump is a ridiculous number. But like, there are 350 million people in this country that are like, you know, 180 or so million registered voters. Do the math. It works. It works out. Those votes have to go somewhere. And yeah, there are enough people on Twitter who hate Andrew Tate for there to be at least 3 million people who like that tweet that Greta Thunberg wrote. And by the way, on Twitter, like, getting over 50,000 likes on a tweet is like massively viral. Getting 100,000 likes on a tweet is huge. It is so rare to see a tweet with a million likes. So rare. And she's got over like 3.5 million. I think somebody released a list and it's like one of the top 20 most liked tweets of all time. Like, she just decimated this guy in like two sentences. And literally, he came to her and she was so nonchalant with her response, like, yeah, whatever, man, get a life. Like, I don't care. Get a life. Like, you're picking a fight with a 19-year-old on the internet. Do something better with your time. He takes 10 hours to formulate a response, 10 hours of thinking about what he wants to say back. And then he posts a 2-minute long video of him wearing a red satin robe and smoking a cigar in like a luxury villa. Super villain. Like I said, super villain. Like, how do you not see this and go like, this guy is, he's Lex Luthor. He's bald. Like, he's out of a fucking Superman movie. He's smoking a cigar, wearing a red satin robe in a villa. And he's eating pizza from these cardboard boxes. And he says, and I'm not going to recycle these boxes either, Greta. And he goes on this 2-minute long rant about how we live in the Matrix and how bots liked her tweet. And that's the only reason why it looks like she's more popular than him. And it's just the saddest thing, where he's trying so hard to pretend like she didn't get to him and like he doesn't care. And it's so obvious that he cares so much. And like, he's put so much effort into looking like he doesn't care. Again, this is a fight that he picked and so quickly lost, like just got annihilated. And he couldn't just like leave it alone. He couldn't just be like, all right, well, whatever. I lost that round. He had to go a step further because his ego is so fragile and make this video. And because he made this video, this terrible video that had these pizza boxes in it, Romanian officials in Romania, who thought that he might be in their country, recognized the pizza boxes as a pizzeria that is only located in Romania, and tracked him down and arrested him a half an hour after he posted the video. Arrested him and his brother for human trafficking. I mean, It's one of the most poetically beautiful stories I think I've ever heard. Like, it doesn't get, again, comic book shit. And he might be onto something with saying that we live in the Matrix because, like, what? That's, you can't write it any better than that, dude. You cannot write it any better than that. I swear, it every year since Trump decided to run for president in 2015, it has gotten more and more cartoonish on the right. Like, I can't come up with something funnier than Donald Trump telling his supporters, hey, I have a major announcement coming tomorrow. Major announcement. Everybody tune in. I've got a huge announcement. And then announcing that he's releasing digital trading cards of himself and selling them for $99 a piece. I can't think of a funnier thing than that. Like Saturday Night Live could never write something that perfect. And it happened in real life. Kyle Rittenhouse just released a video game with some video game developer, and they released this commercial for it, and it's called Kyle Rittenhouse's Duck Hunt. And it's, you play as Kyle Rittenhouse, and you shoot ducks that have words on them like fake news and like woke liberals and stuff like that, and like gay agenda, and you shoot those ducks as Kyle Rittenhouse. And they released this commercial that it looks like something that Tim and Eric made. If you've ever seen Tim and Eric, Awesome Show, Wow, on Cartoon Network, it looks and feels like that. Like, this guy steps out who's not joking, who is not doing a character, who is not joking, and he's like, when the woke media decided to come for Kyle Rittenhouse after he was trying to be a hero, and that voice that I'm doing is not, that's how he sounds. I'm not, like, doing a voice to make him sound silly. I'm trying to do as accurate of an impression of him as I can right now. He's like, when the woke mob tried to come for Kyle, who was just trying to be a hero, he stood up for his Second Amendment rights. Well, now we made a video game where you can play as Kyle Rittenhouse. And you would think it's a joke. You would think this is like a bit. But then Kyle Rittenhouse is in the video as well. And he's like, that's right. Kyle Rittenhouse's Duck Hunt is now available. And he's in the video and they're being serious. And this is a real product that they made. What am I going to do going forward as a person who tries to satirize these people on the internet? How am I supposed to compete with how silly they are? Andrew Tate got himself arrested for human trafficking because he couldn't not try to clap back at a 19-year-old climate activist. Dude. And in none of his clapbacks or his original tweet did he ever sound at all like a person, like nothing he said was like, ah, oh, well, he kind of got her there. It was all just like the saddest thing. It was just sad and ridiculous and pathetic and perfect. And the villain of 2022, the comic book villain of 2022, Andrew Tate, the King Douche himself, on like the third to last day of the year, is hoisted by his own ineptitude and idiocy. And is sent to jail. And I hope that the charges stick. Anyway, we're talking about resolutions today. I got Colin Stanley on the show, a.k.a. Little Victorian Boy. If you're not following at Little Victorian Boy on Instagram or TikTok, you absolutely should stop what you're doing right now and go do that. He's hilarious. This is a guy who, like, the second I saw one of his videos, the first time I saw one of his videos, I was like, oh, this guy's good. This guy's a good writer and a good performer. And then every time I see one of his videos, I stop and watch it. And it's one of those accounts that gets an instant like from me every time. And I'm just so impressed with him. And I was over at my friend Kara's house the other night, and he showed up. And like, it was one of those rare moments where like a content creator from the internet who I recognize showed up at a place. And I was genuinely so excited and starstruck. I was like, oh my God, Little Victorian Boy just showed up. And luckily we, I hope hit it off somewhat, and he decided to come over and help me out and talk about resolutions and talk about, you know, this and that on the podcast. He came over in person over to the Blankenfort, and here it is. This is the conversation. So from a Blankenfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer at the end of the year 2022, and I'm talking with my new friend, Colin Stanley, about resolutions. What's up, YouTube? What's up, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're at? Not Stitcher. People are always like, put the podcast on Stitcher. It's not on Stitcher. Maybe that'll happen in 2023, but not yet. So if you're out on Stitcher, not you, but whoever else. Hi, we're back. It's the last episode of 2022. We did it. We did all of them, and it's New Year's time. And I'm here. I got a person in the studio with me, sitting across from me again. It's the third time that we've done this year. We're figuring out how to make this happen more reliably, more consistently. Colin Stanley is here. Great content creator, very, very funny person. If you don't follow, at Little Victorian Boy on Instagram and TikTok, you should. Hilarious sketches. Colin, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Well, it's great to have you here. How was your 2022?
2022 was good. Better than 2021.
Yeah,
I would say probably. Yeah, some new things happening for me. Trying to.
What happened that made it better than 2021?
2021, I was still just coming out of the pandemic. I had just made the move to LA.
Which is a bad time to move to LA.
LA is a hard city to integrate yourself into, and especially when folks aren't all that social. Things aren't open. So 2022, it felt like I have more of a community here, and it's been better. Yeah,
that's good. When did stuff first start like happening and materializing more for you online? Did that happen in 2021 or was it more this last year?
It started in 2021. I was living in Minneapolis with my parents during that winter of 2020, 2021. Mm-hmm. And I posted the Baskin Robbins TikTok.
Was that the first one?
That was my first one. And I had never gone viral online before. And it was my first TikTok, and then within like 2 days, it had a million views, and I was like, "Okay, I'm famous now."
That's how they get you.
Now the money comes after this. Now I get. Now,
and how's that going?
Oh, the money is not coming, but yeah, I got to jump the gun on that one, but no, it was very fun, and it kind of jump started me on that platform, and brought this audience that I'd been doing comedy for 10 years, mm-hmm. but mostly live, in Chicago, Denver before that. And to have this much larger, somewhat global audience, was cool and wild. It's fun to have fans and get recognized on the street from time to time. Absolutely. Happened to me yesterday at a Best Buy.
Oh yeah. What'd they say?
They were like, "Do I know you?" And I was like, "Maybe," and they're like, "You're on TikTok." I'm like, "Yeah." Their partner loved my content, and
I find in LA, it's the only place that I go that people are like, "Where do I know you from? Like, how do I know you?" And it's like, if I'm anywhere else, people just come up and they're like, "Oh my God, Austin, what's up?" Like people will come up and like, if I'm in Salt Lake City, I was in Omaha recently. In New York City, I was in Ireland earlier this year.
Yeah,
and people will just come up and be like, "Hey, you're Austin, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." They're like, "Wow, what are you doing here?" But in LA, people are always like, "Hey, do I know you? How do I know you? And I don't think it's that they're big timing or anything like that. I think it's just that they see so many famous people so regularly that they don't know, are you someone that I recognize from a thing, or are you, or do I just know you? Did I meet you at a bar one night?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of celebrities about.
Well, and we're not like properly famous people who are on magazines or billboards or in movies. So it's like, it is hard to know. Like, did I see you just like in a scene of a TV show or like?
Yeah. And when someone asked me that, like, "Do I know you from somewhere?" I feel awkward because I don't want to immediately be like, "Yeah, I'm a big deal on TikTok," because that's obnoxious. Because that one time that happened, I was getting headshots done when I first moved here, and the photographer was like, "Do I recognize you from something?" And I was like, "Oh, I've got a following on TikTok." And he's like, "No, that's not it."
Well, that's like, that's the other LA thing that always happens is I'll go, "It's probably TikTok." And they'll go, "No, it's not that." And I'm like, and everyone's like too cool for it. They're like, "No, it's not TikTok." And I'm like, "Okay, well, it's TikTok or it's Reddit or Instagram or like my videos are on other places other than just TikTok. But like you most likely saw it on TikTok. But if you're not on TikTok, you still could have had my face like happen across your screen on Instagram or even Twitter or, you know, like people share Reddit, the videos other places and they've gone viral other places, but they're always like, no, it's not TikTok.
And no, of course it's not TikTok. No,
I'm not on TikTok. What do you think I am? A 6-year old? It's like, well, I mean, that's where I work. Pretty,
For me, I'm like, well, it's either TikTok or you saw a old Bill Pullman film recently and you're confused about how time works.
Are you the guy from Spaceballs? Is that you?
Yeah, you're Lone Star from Spaceballs, right? Yeah.
Yeah, no.
While you were sleeping? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was my age when he made that 40 years ago. Did you have any I guess here's a better question, because this is what I wanted to talk about in this episode. First, the first question I would ask is like, do you believe in resolutions? Do you make resolutions every year, or is that not a thing that you do?
I make them. Yeah, I believe in them. I don't really believe that anyone completes them. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone completing a New Year's resolution for an entire year.
But it is a tradition that you participate in?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. My mindset around New Year's resolutions and like New Year's in general, is that it feels like a very lonely holiday for me anyway. It's always kind of disappointing in some ways. Yeah.
You mean like New Year's kiss and stuff like that?
New Year's kiss. It's I'm from colder climates typically. So it's usually very cold and dark period of the year. You just got past the holiday season.
This whole section, it's a rough like 2-month solid stretch between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day. It's like 60-ish straight days of like, do you have people?
Yeah.
Do you have like people in your life that you
get
to?
Do you have family? Do you have love?
Yeah.
What do you have?
Yeah, yeah. And then
are you complete?
Once you're clear of that, like no one cares if you're shacked up on St. Patrick's Day.
No, they prefer it if you're not. So it definitely has some like lonely, you know, I feel like people don't make New Year's resolutions when they feel content.
Mm-hmm.
And in that regard, I make a New Year's resolution every year. So it's
you think that people who like have it all are just like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. I think they're just like, I'm good. Yeah. that's for people that need to change something about themselves drastically, who have looked back at the last year and realized, oh, I've done some things wrong. And now I need to fix something about myself, make myself a better person.
I can see that. And I think that's the thing that's sort of a bummer about New Year's too, is that they are forced to look at like, okay, what were my resolutions last year and did I do them? I don't know that I don't ever really write them down. Usually what happens is I just get asked like at a party, like, okay, what's everyone's resolutions? And then you go around a circle and I'm like, I have to think right then and there, like, oh, I guess I'll say this, you know? But then, and some of them I think about and I'm like this year I had a very specific one that did happen that I'm like, okay, that happened. But well, most of the time it's like, I want to get in shape.
What was it? Or if it's too private, you don't
know. It was a number that I was trying to make money wise. And it was a friend of mine told me to like say a number that told me to tell him and a bunch of people. And like, he was like, tell other people too. He was like, tell several people that this is what you're going to make this year.
Yeah.
And I did that. It was very like Gary Vee, like, just fucking tell me, man, what's the number and make it a big number, be bold about it.
Yeah.
But I did that and I didn't have any clue how I was going to achieve what I wanted to achieve at the beginning of the year, but I just stayed sort of open to it, like energetically, like I'll just, whatever emerges.
You were open to accepting money?
Yes. Okay, energetically open to if people want to present me with opportunities to make money. I'm with it.
Hell yeah.
But I typically don't like very specific resolutions, because I think that sets you up for disappointment, being like, I would like to gain this many pounds in muscle this year. You know, it's like, well, you're almost asking for,
I'd like to gain 100 pounds in muscle this year.
I'd like to nearly,
but in the lower half only.
I'd like to nearly double my body weight.
Tired of getting knocked over. Need to get those thick legs.
I need sturdier cement block legs this year. Yeah. That's the goal. I want to gain 100 pounds in my thighs and calves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that reminds me of, there's a Where's Waldo image. I think it's the beach one. And there's one guy who's like working out and he's just all upper body. And then there's a guy who's really skinny and he's just got massive muscular legs.
That's
and
fantastic.
Standing next to each other. Yeah. And I remember looking at that from childhood, but that.
And like taking note, being like, someday.
I'd be like, someday.
The leg guy.
I'll be the leg guy.
No, but I don't like making them too specific, because I feel like you're setting yourself up for things to not work out, and for you to be very aware by the end of the year, like, oh, I didn't do that thing. This felt like a really specific thing, like saying this number that I wanted to make, and I won't say it on the podcast, but I'll tell you afterward if you want to know.
$100 million.
How the hell did you nail it?
Yeah, all right. Yeah,
you came into my place where I live, and you were like, "This guy made $100 million."
Looks like he made $100 million. Yeah. This is a nice sign.
His sign cost at least $2 million.
That's a $2 million sign right there.
But it felt too specific. I was like, I don't like that, because I don't like, and one thing I know about my life is that, like, it rarely, if ever, goes according to my plan. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever plans that I have set up for my career, it always takes a different route than I expected. Like, so I don't like making things too specific. But this thing, I think there was a vagueness in the methodology of how this number could potentially come into my life. And that was the difference, was just being like, I have no idea what I'm going to do to do that, but I am saying and stating to multiple people that this is what I would like, and making it like a thing that I have now said out loud, and I am now visualizing this number. And weirdly enough, and I don't know if it means that there's any proof in manifestation or the power of attraction or whatever, but weirdly enough, it did find its way
into your brain.
I
mean, I think there's whatever there is truth to it in that, like, if you say something, you say you're going to do something, you put that into your brain. And even when you're not thinking about it subconsciously, that is running underneath the surface. And it does help you achieve those things, or you're just looking for them more often. I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe that's the utility in making resolutions, is just like, just stating out loud to people or to yourself, like, this is something I would like to work on this year. And not necessarily holding yourself to, like, if I don't, then I'm a failure. But, like, you know,
I think if you make it the full month of January, you've succeeded.
that's the length that most of them survive, especially like going to the gym every day.
Going to the gym, that one is so hard. I've done that one before, where it's like, I'm gonna work out a lot, and it never pans out. Now I'd go climbing, which is just fun to do, and that's my workout. But I can't even go. I can only go 2 days a week, because my body's old and it needs time to heal.
But you're going climbing. You play basketball.
I play some basketball sometimes. Very recently, my roommate wanted to get into basketball, so we've been going to the courts near us, and I've been missing a lot of shots, and which is always embarrassing.
You're more active than me, and if I could achieve climbing twice a week and going and playing basketball at least once a week, I would say that was a success.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can keep that up, that it's great. I've done, let's see, other New Year's resolutions I've done. I tried to learn Spanish one time. I tried to learn Spanish a few times, but one time I completed all of Duolingo, and I did all the Duolingo Spanish. I got them all, and could not speak Spanish at the end of it. It's not how you learn.
What does Duolingo do? Do they do like filling out worksheets, like teaching you verbs and conjugation and how to write and stuff? Or is it like, do you talk?
They do a little bit of it. Like, there's a little bit of talking. It's a lot of like, here's a question, fill in. It's been a while since I've done it. They probably changed their how they do it, where it's like, what is the right answer? And you got to score a certain amount of points. You have a certain amount of lives, essentially, to get the worksheet done. It's essentially a worksheet where you're just answering questions. But they do ones where you have to talk into your phone to pronounce it correctly. I don't know how accurate that is. As well as things where it's like you listen to someone say something and then you have to.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with like how we teach languages in general in at least this country.
Yeah.
But like I don't think we're immersive enough about it. And I think the best way to teach anyone a language is be like, if I'm going to learn how to speak Spanish, I should go live in Spain for 6 months.
Yeah. And that's what I was in Ecuador for a month and Peru for a couple months. And so I was kind of and doing immersion classes while I was there, which was, that was like the most helpful.
Right.
That by far. Yeah.
Yeah. That was probably the most progress he made.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though I still felt like after 3 months of immersion, I was like, this isn't enough. I would probably need a full year before I felt comfortable.
Totally. You probably got to the point where you could start understanding what other people were saying more, where you're like, I get what that person just said. I'm just not sure how to respond.
Yeah. Like yeah. Oh yeah. I would have full conversations with, my instructors in Spanish that felt like, oh, I'm getting somewhere. But then out in the world, it was much more difficult because I felt guilty that I was taking someone's time by, especially if they spoke English or were trying to like, if it was transactional, it felt like I'm wasting their time by trying to speak Spanish to them and them having to deal with that. So I always felt the Minnesotan in me felt very guilty and ashamed and being like, well, I don't want to waste their time, but I'll just do what's easiest rather than.
Yeah, I know that you're like, I don't want to. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to make them have to be my teacher in this moment. So I'm just going to respond in the way that helps the conversation move along.
Yes. Yeah. So, the Uber rides were the most helpful because you're trapped with like that. You're just talking to them.
Yeah.
That you don't, or taxis or whatever.
Yeah,
you're like, well, it doesn't, they're doing their job. They're driving. We're in the car. They're talking to me. We're doing our best to communicate. And so those were some of the moments where I could get some real conversation going.
I did a play several years ago where I was hired to play a character who's deaf. And I spent like 4 or 5 months learning the script in American Sign Language. And I had a teacher who was a deaf person who helped me, you know, every day we would work together. And then the theater company at the last minute realized that they should not have hired a hearing actor to play this role. And they, which was the correct thing the correct thing to realize.
Yeah.
And they went and found a hard of hearing actor to come in and play the role, but they kept me on the show as his understudy and as the assistant director because they already had like I'd already signed the contract and everything.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we shouldn't have done that, but also we'd feel bad that we had you work for so long to learn, you know.
And you're like, oh yeah, and I feel bad for learning a useful skill.
But what was cool was because there's not like a country you can go to where everyone speaks sign language, but this person that came out to do the show, we would go and like hang out with him and other hard of hearing and deaf people. And we'd go out like to bars and clubs together, and I would be the only hearing person in the group. And it was a really interesting way to like spend an evening with people who no one's speaking out loud. And I'm just like looking around, mostly just like watching to understand. And I do feel like I was able to learn how to follow the conversation before I was able to learn how to participate fully, you know? I think that's how that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That got us off the topic of resolutions.
Resolutions, yeah.
Do you recall what your resolutions were last year?
No, I have no memory of them at all. That's how important they were to me.
Do you think one of them was to go climbing twice a week maybe? Or
I was starting to climb again right before the new year. Yeah, last year, geez. 2022 New Year's. I'm trying to think what it would have been. It was probably a content thing. I was probably like, oh, I'm going to post a new video two or three a week. Either that or it was finish my a pilot that I was writing. I think that those were the two main things.
I should
that
say
we're
if anyone
about.
Hears if anyone's hearing buffs and woofs and things like that.
That's me. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Colin is farting. I'm farting. They're very weird sounding farts. Over but no.
I won't see a doctor. Yeah. I refuse.
People tell me this is not a normal noise for someone's
and those people can mind their own damn business.
Last year my resolution was to figure out why my farts sound the way that they do.
Yeah,
and I forgot to get it checked, and I just resolved to not ever get it checked. Now I'm watching my friend's dog right now, and she is in the studio with us. Because I thought she was going to be barking too much if I left her out of the studio, and now she's barking a bunch in here because she's being bad. But she just hears noises, and we're not paying attention to her. So if you hear her boofing and whimpering, that's what that is.
Yeah,
she's a very cute dog, though. And if she comes over near me, I'll lift her up for the camera to see so everyone can see her. Yeah. I think I had similar resolutions about what I wanted to achieve. Mm-hmm. Content wise, I was hoping to, one of my goals was to introduce the video element of this podcast, which I've got going now.
Yeah. But
the reason why I wanted to do that is I wanted to build out my YouTube presence and like build up the mm-hmm. YouTube channel and grow my YouTube following and like make more YouTube exclusive content. And that has not really emerged. The only piece of YouTube exclusive content that I make right now is this.
Yeah.
Which this is not really YouTube exclusive because you can hear the audio version on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and stuff, but like it's the videos only on YouTube. Yeah. But it's not enough to give my YouTube page
like a big subscriber base. It's tough. YouTube is hard to grow on for new. Even if you have a big following on TikTok, it's hard to move people over there. I don't know if the audiences are really overlapped that much.
And vice versa. I know a lot of big YouTubers who have not been able to figure out TikTok.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like, whatever, I don't need to. I've been established here on YouTube for several years. I don't really
need.
And
YouTube pays?
Right. Yeah.
More, so why would you?
Totally. Yeah. I think the only reason is just to like expand mm-hmm. your visibility and expand your brand. But if you're a solid YouTube page that's been established for several years and you've got 3 to 5 million subscribers, like you can make a healthy six-figure income year in, year out doing that. And you don't really need to do much else. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Being on TikTok, and I don't know how, like, I understand how YouTube makes their money from that. I don't understand, like, I know TikTok has a lot of money, but when I think about them paying me for views, and it's not much at all.
No.
I'm like, yeah, that makes, like, it makes sense to me, because I'm like, how much are they actually earning off of my content, exclusively? Because there's a lot of creators that have a big following, and I would like it to be. To have more money, mm-hmm. but I know they don't want to give it to me, and they have no reason right now.
Right.
So
I know all about that too. Yeah. Where it's like, why would, I think the thing that will force their hand, if anything does, is just like
creators leaving or
it's just the fact that like long term, you are going to start losing a lot of creators. You are going to start losing a lot of people mm-hmm. if you continue to run your business in a way that doesn't appreciate the people who make your business what it is. Who knows if they'll do that or not? Because resolutions have this ability to like make people feel like, as you said at the beginning, perfectly, where you're like, I don't know that people who have their lives together really do resolutions. I don't know whether that's true or not. But because it has this ability to be linked to, like, what can you improve upon? What can you do better? And then you get to the end of the year and feel like, oh, I didn't do a lot of those things I wanted to do. Do you think that it's, like, a healthy practice that we do?
I think it can be. I think if you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself to accomplish these things and not view the attempt as being valuable in and of itself, then I think it's unhealthy. But I think taking time to think about your life, to be self-reflective, to make an attempt to better yourself in a way that you think would be good, even if it's small, like you're like, I want to start this new hobby because I've always wanted to do that. It's a nice opportunity to give yourself an excuse to change in some way and grow. So I think in that respect, it can be helpful. I think putting too much pressure on it and making it too serious is where I think there's probably pitfalls. But I think like any time of year, you should be able to be like, I'm going to start doing something new. I mean, that's what I do all the time. I've changed careers multiple times. I get bored all so easily. All attached to
New Year's resolutions, just every year?
Oh, yeah, all New Year's resolutions. Well, every year I'm, like, changing everything about myself. It's just, like, I get obsessed over, like, a new hobby or a new thing, and I'll get into it, and I just like learning new skills all the time. That's interesting to me. That's the type of life I want to live, is just acquiring a little bit of knowledge about a lot of different things, which isn't very, you know, marketable in capitalism, but I feel more fulfilled learning new skill sets. But
yeah, I get that. And I think that that's admirable. One of mine this next year, and we'll get into what our resolutions might be this year. But one of mine this year is, and I think that this is like, yeah, like you said, like trying to think of ways, little ways that maybe you can better yourself, not trying to keep it practical, achievable, trying to keep it in a space where it's like not something that I'm going to be super down on myself. But also maybe I will be if I don't accomplish this one, but like it's something I want to do. At some point in the next few weeks, I want to learn all of my friends' birthdays. Like, I want to reach out to people that are, like, important to me and put them on my calendar.
Yeah.
So that I can, like, have it on my calendar and just remember to call this person or just reach out with a text to this person on this day. It's just something that I've never been good about. I don't know any of my friends or family's birthdays. Like, I don't know anybody's birthdays.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would like to know that. I would like to know how I can a simple way that I can let people know that they matter to me.
Yeah. Ever since I stopped really using Facebook, that was really the purpose of Facebook.
That was the best thing that Facebook had going for it.
Yep. Yeah. Was just remembering birthdays.
And also on your birthday, it was like, as much as we all like, we hate to admit it, it's like, we really do like that Facebook
attention?
Birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
that Facebook birthday of like opening up your phone and like there's just everybody from high school and college and like and like all these people you haven't thought about in years saying happy birthday.
Your crush?
Yeah.
What did they say? Did they wish me happy birthday? Was it just happy birthday or was it a little more specific?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. But I was never even good at that. I wasn't even one of the people that would wish people happy birthday on their
– Oh, I wouldn't.
Because I thought like if I do one person, I have to do everybody.
Yeah.
If I say happy birthday to one person on Facebook, then like I now have to say happy birthday to every person that I know. That's too many people.
And it was always weird getting birthday messages from people that I barely knew, and I knew that they just do this to everybody's birthday.
But also then don't you think about those people like, wait, are you doing this every day? Every day, because surely every day you're getting notifications that it's someone's birthday.
They are.
Don't you think that's kind of incredible that those people are doing that every day?
Yeah. Good for them. Although, that's hard. I can't do that. I can barely stay in contact with my closest friends.
Yeah, it's like I have to be reminded to call my parents on their birthday, you know, like and. But there's these people out here who every time Facebook tells them, hey, it's Zach Johnson's birthday, they're right there.
Yeah.
With a, hey, how you doing?
Yeah. I can't do it.
I had a friend who passed away several years ago. This is probably like 5 or 6 years ago now. But when she died, I went and looked at her – like my – you can like see your friendship on Facebook – and I noticed that like she hadn't missed a birthday of mine. Like she and not only did she say happy birthday on every birthday, she wrote like a long message. Like she would always like write like a memory that she had with you and like write something special. Oh. And I said that. I posted it. I was like, oh man, she like never missed a birthday of mine. And all these people in the comments were like, me too. I just went back and looked at my page with her and like she never missed my birthday. And it was like 30 people who had the same story where they're like, she wrote me like a really special message every year on my birthday. And I was like, what a simple little thing that this person did in her short lifetime that made such a huge impact.
Yeah.
You know?
That's very sweet.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
That's nice.
Yeah. I think my birthday resolution is also just attached to the fact that, like, I want to be better at showing up for the people in my life this year. I just want to, in little ways, in simple ways, I just want to make the people in my life know that they who matter to me know that they matter to me. I think I take it for granted that, like, they know, that they understand. You know, I had some friendships end this year, and I was like, oh, friendships can end just like relationships can end. And, like, if you don't nurture them and take care of them, they can go away. And so that's a thing I want to focus on this year. And again, it sounds really specific, but it's also like there's a lot of different ways that I can accomplish that. And if I just have that intention energetically to be like, I want to make sure that the people I care about know. My friend in the comments on YouTube is asking if it's Nessa, and it is. He went to college with me, and it's our friend Janessa who did that. You know what I'm talking about, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I feel like that's a that's an honorable New Year's resolution. It's very selfless. You're doing it for the people that you care about, and that's very sweet. I'm gonna get a 6-pack abs.
Yeah,
that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get 6-pack abs, and
okay, I believe in you.
No, I'm not.
What's the goal? How are you gonna do that?
No, I can't get 6-pack abs. I've tried. It's all lower body. No, it's all lower body for me, baby. I think for me, I want to try to read more consistently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a terrible reader. I can't focus. I can't keep my mind focused on books, on novels, really. But I love writing and I love storytelling. And I feel like when I read, it makes me a better writer and a better storyteller.
So I'm the exact same way, and I've gotten a lot of flack over it over the years. And I actually had like a big stance on it for a while, where I was like, you know what? No, fuck that. Books just don't work for me. Like, like the form of prose, for whatever reason, doesn't work for me. For whatever reason. I don't know why. I've tried so many times, and it just, like, my brain sort of can't, my brain can't stay with it. Like, I'll start reading, and by the time I'm like 5 pages into a chapter, I realize that I haven't been paying attention for the last 2 pages.
Yeah.
And I have to go back and reread. And then it's like, I really have to work to focus on it. Whereas, like, a podcast or a movie or a TV show, or these are easier things for me to sort of like consume passively and lose myself in and get wrapped up in. A book, it requires a lot of me. And so for a while that was a hot take of mine, but I think every year I'm also like, I would like to figure out how to be a better reader.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think film and podcasts and other media are valid, effective ways to get that information and enjoy that story. I think there is something valuable in seeing things on a page as well, though, especially if you want to write. Just seeing, at least that's how my brain works, is just structurally seeing how it's laid out helps me understand how I can do that.
I get that. I was going to say, do you think you can get some of the same effect from an audiobook, but maybe that when you're talking about structure or format, but do you think that you can maybe by osmosis somehow sort of have the form of prose and well-structured prose can get into your brain by listening to an audiobook?
I think so. But I think the practice of actually sitting down and typing something out and writing it is helpful for me to see it. It's more helpful for me to just see it. And see how things are paced and structured. Even like grammar, as far as like, what's the best way to organize this sentence to say it like this or have it be said like this? I'm like, oh, I could do that. That's an interesting technique. And I do a lot of script writing. So it's mostly dialogue and that's all human speech. And so you can get more creative in how you structure that, because you're trying to have someone communicate not only what someone's saying, but also how they're saying it for a whole nother context.
What about script reading for you? Do you find it easier?
I count that as reading in my New Year's resolution.
And
for
you find that easier to read, like a play or a screenplay, than a book, or is that the same thing where you find yourself tuning out and having to go back and reread?
I would say the same thing. Yeah. where I find myself tuning out, especially if it's like a script that I've already seen the movie of.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of get the gist of it. But I still do that because it's helpful. I will go and be like, if I really like a show or a movie, I will try to go find the screenplay or the pilot script or whatever, just to get an idea of, I'm like, what did it actually look like on the page? Because so much else happens between the writing of it and the actual release.
Well, and that fucks us up too, because if we read a shooting script, it's different than a pitch script. Because like a shooting script like has like specific shots to script, and it's all these things that like screenwriting 101 classes will be like,
wouldn't put that in.
Don't ever tell people like what the shot is. Don't ever tell them that it's like a wide that cuts to a, you know, like, or that it's like the whole scene is a one or something. You know, it's like, don't, but I'm like, but every script that I've ever read for a project I'm doing has that stuff in there. And it's like, well, that's because it's a shooting script.
Yeah.
They've already decided that this is a locked version of the script. And so this is the notes between the director and the DP on how they're going to shoot it in the script. And I'm like, but that's what I want. I want to write that. I want that. I want them to be able to see what it is that I'm hoping. That's
hoping
part
it
of,
to look like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those things where you're like, I mean, you have to trust whatever the future director is, or you would have that relationship where you could explain how you want it to visually look, or I guess, I don't know, to do it all, direct and write and DP and be the sound guy and star in it. And that's pretty hard.
I mean, that's what we do though. That's internet content creation.
Yeah.
But I think plays are easier for me to read than screenplays in general. Mm, I just think that screenplays are, it's like reading blueprints or like reading,
it's
like
a recipe.
Yeah. It's like reading instructions. Like if you open up like an instruction manual for like how to build a couch or something, like that's what I feel like I'm reading when I read a screenplay sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's harder to get lost in it because so much of it is the direction part and not the dialogue part.
Mm-hmm.
And a play does have stage directions, but the vast majority of it is just characters talking.
Yeah.
And that's easier for me to just get into a flow with.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's my problem with prose, is that too often I find myself in my head telling the writer, like, get to it.
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, describing things too much. And I'm just like, just move the plot forward, please. Like, get to the next thing that happens.
But,
like, they've got to give me all the context of, like, who this person that's going to do the next thing that affects the plot is. So there's going to be a whole section of like, or maybe an entire chapter just describing who that person is so that I can understand why the thing that they're about to do that's going to move the plot forward is so significant. But I just, I get lost in the sauce with that stuff, you know?
Totally. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just finished my first book in
ever.
Ever.
Congratulations.
It feels like it in years.
Yeah.
I've started so many books over the years and not finished them. And I just finished a book that was an audiobook, and I blasted through it in like 2 days, and I couldn't believe it how quickly I went through it.
Yeah.
And it was a book called I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy. Have you heard of this book?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
You know Jeanette McCurdy? She was on like iCarly.
I know only ancillary things.
I never saw the show about it. I was in college by the time the show was on TV, but
yeah,
she wrote this book. And what I liked about the writing was she doesn't waste too much time in any chapter saying what she's trying to say. She just is, it's very like, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then, you know, and she, it's just events. And it's not like her, she doesn't waste too much time exploring the psychology of what's going on. She just tells you this happened next, then this happened next. And it's a memoir of events in her life. But I think that because she's so, it feels like all the floweriness is stripped out of the language that's used. It feels like she had a great editor who came in and was like, let's just keep it really, really dry and straightforward, and let people feel what they're going to feel based on what you're telling them happen. Mm-hmm. But let's not spend too much time on anything that's not action based. And I don't know. I blasted right through that thing. Loved it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. But I guess maybe I found out that nonfiction is my genre. I don't know.
Yeah. I have a hard time with nonfiction. I can read articles about things, nonfiction-wise, but it's hard for me to... I don't remember the last time I read a full nonfiction book. I've gotten into some and, like, kind of skimmed to different parts that I was interested in. But I guess memoirs. So a few memoirs here and there.
Yeah, if it's, like, but, a person that you're interested in or if they have a really interesting story.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I also listened to Barack Obama's book, audiobook, and it's, like, great because he's reading it, and it's a fantastic story, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a life.
What a life. So, okay, you're getting abs.
I'm getting abs.
You're going to try to read more. Are there any other resolutions that you have for 2023?
For 2023, let's see here. I want to, like, this is more of, like, a general career goal, but I want to make a living doing comedy. Right now, I've got net negative income from it. I'm making some money off of it, more than I had been the last few years. That's the goal. Whether that's getting staffed up and being a writer somewhere, whether that's piecemealed freelance stuff.
Think you can do it.
I think so too. I hope so. Yeah.
I mean, I think you're talented enough to do it. And I mean, you've been getting some writing gigs already and stuff.
I've been getting some writing gigs here and there. Doing some stuff with College Humor recently, which is exciting,
right?
Which was, like, I watched them when I was in college, and so it's cool to have them reach out and work
very
with them
cool,
a little
full
bit.
Circle. Were you surprised when they reached out?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm surprised when anybody reaches out. And I've had a few people who are bigger people or connected to bigger people reach out because of TikTok. And I always think my initial thought is, oh, this must be a scam. This is a person who's lying to me. Like, I always have to, like, double check, like, email addresses and Instagram. I do, like, a little investigation before I respond, where I'm like, oh, this is a person trying to scam me. Yes. And I'm like, oh, it's like, oh no, they appreciate it. Like, I met with an executive that works with Nick Kroll a year ago, which was cool.
They just see one of your videos and we're like,
yeah, hey. They're like, hey, we're a fan. Me and Nick are fans. They said Nick Kroll was a fan, which who knows if that was true or if they I wouldn't doubt it. You know, I'm a funny guy. Yeah.
People come out of the woodwork.
People come out of the woodwork.
And they who see your internet stuff. I'm always surprised. I'm always like, oh, who? What? Like,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh, cool. So we, you know, had like a general meeting and sent some scripts, some pilots and stuff out to them. And, so that was really cool. But that was the first time someone had reached out to me, and it was such a big person. It was, you know, executive that works with Nick Kroll. I'm like, immediately I was like, this can't be real. Like, that can't be a real thing that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Every like big celebrity that I find out is following me, I always think it's a fake account at first.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm always like, this is fake. Right. And I'll like message them and be like, is this you? And they'll be like, yes. And I'll be like, prove it.
It's wild. So hopefully something will happen where I feel like I'm actually, like, I'm doing so much work for comedy and creating a lot, but being able to get to a point where I feel like, oh, I'm secure financially from this work, it would be awesome.
I think it's a testament to the quality of the work that you put out and the content that you put out that people peg you for, like, writing gigs, that people reach out and they're like, oh, I want to see a script by this guy, or I want to hear some pitches for, like, sketch ideas or joke ideas from this guy, because that's what I got too when I first found your stuff. That's why I asked you the other day when we were talking, I was like, do you write this stuff all out? Because I do a lot of just, like, I have an idea for the script in my head, but I just sort of talk off the cuff to myself. I don't really write it, but your stuff is so structured and well crafted, and like the beats are so well paced and put together that I just hear it and I'm like, oh, this just sounds like it's really well written. Like, this just sounds like it's, and it's well written by a person who has a good comedy mind and who has the ability to generate really funny scenarios that other people wouldn't think of easily. And I think that's good that people, that seems to be like the kind of thing that people are reaching out about.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the kind of thing I want to end up doing. I think ultimately that's my goal in LA, in Hollywood, coming here is, you know, I don't necessarily need to be in front of the camera. I don't really, like, I like acting and I like performing. But ultimately my goal is to write. So, yeah, I think that's something that I didn't know until this last year. I think that was a decision I kind of made where I was like, I really like actually just writing comedy more than performing it, I think. And for a long time, I was an improviser. So I wasn't even writing anything. I was just going up on stage every night and performing. And that was super fun.
Where did you start improvising?
In Denver, Colorado, at a theater called the Bovine Metropolis Theater. They were like the only long form improv theater in the city for a while. And now I think they're still maybe operating in an online capacity, but they lost their space, during the pandemic. So they kind of, are not around so much, in Denver from what I know. But yeah, I was, just out of college. I was an engineer. I was working in power plants, in Colorado, and both my parents were actors. So I was raised around theater and I missed performing in some capacity and I needed a hobby. I needed new friends cause I was in a new city. And I remembered that I remember that you could take improv classes cause I saw it in an Office episode, where Michael Scott's an awful person in the, improv class.
Yeah, he just keeps pulling guns out.
Very, very funny. But I was like, oh yeah, they teach classes for that. And that seemed less scary than going to doing like a stand-up open mic.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then I went and, took a class and fell in love with it and then did it for 6 years in Denver and then moved to Chicago, did it for 3 years there.
I think it's great that you figured out that you want to write more. That's always good. It's always a gift when you can like have a realization like that and be like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That's something that I feel really strongly about and that I want to move in that direction. Also that resolution to me is like, it feels like it's in the same vein as what I was talking about earlier with like I want to make this much money, X amount of money. Mm-hmm. It seems really specific saying I want to make a living, in comedy.
Yeah.
But it's also like, just stating an intention of something like that, stating it out loud, stating it in a public forum like this podcast, saying I would like to make a living with comedy, knowing that you've already had some dominoes start to hit where you're like, oh, that domino just needs to hit a couple more things or a couple more times.
Yeah.
And I should be able to break one of these off. And I think what I like about resolutions like that is just staying open to however that might come about. You know, and it might not happen till like June. Like you might be like halfway through the year and you've forgotten that like you even had that goal. I doubt you're going to forget.
If it happens in June, that'll be a great June for me.
Yeah. You know, and then like you never know when that general meeting's going to happen where someone asks you to send some scripts over where they go, no, we want to actually do this. And we want to buy this script from you for $100,000. And and you go like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. That right there has me, you know,
yeah,
making my living, mm-hmm. If I do nothing else, and it can happen that fast, but I think it's about knowing that that's the intention and continuing to move forward in that direction with a certain gusto and then just being open to whatever comes, however it might emerge.
Yeah. And I'm trying to find, and similar to your New Year's resolution from last year, where it's like, yeah, I don't know where that's going to come from, but being more open to lots of different opportunities as they come.
I gotta read a comment on YouTube here. Sometimes I get, there are like some people that just like hate me because of my politics and stuff, you know, they follow around and they pop into live streams and things like that.
And so you got one?
We got a fun one. We got someone named, their screen name is Dinosaur Sympathizer. Not a bad screen name. And they say, my resolution is to not consume wild propaganda.
It's a good resolution.
That's great. Yeah. We should all not want to consume wild propaganda.
Or Olivia Wilde propaganda?
Yeah, all of the above.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I will hear no Olivia Wilde slander or conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
All 2023.
There were a lot there last year. Don't Worry Darling was a whole thing.
I mean, do you think that Harry Styles spit on
it looked like he did.
It did, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
did you see the video?
I saw the video, yeah.
It definitely looked
like he spit on Chris Pine, yeah, but
if he didn't, it's like what was that? It's not, because you don't actually see really a thing leave his mouth. It's just the interplay between like the head move that Harry Styles makes,
the head move, and then Chris Pine's reaction to
where
something
he
that
looks
was
in his lap, like, "Are you kidding me? Did you just do that?" And then looks up and kind of laughs to himself, like, "No way."
Yeah. Unless it's a coincidence and Chris Pine was just looking at his own dick and having that reaction.
And just kind of thinking, like,
are you kidding me?
Like,
got such a great dick.
Like, it's crazy.
I can't believe it.
I'm at the Venice Film Festival.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Pine.
I'm Chris freaking Pine, and I got a great dick.
And I got this dick.
What a life I live.
You know, and it just happened at that same time.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. My favorite thing in that clip, too, is at the end, Harry sits down. So Chris Pine is sitting between Harry and Olivia Wilde. And I don't want to contribute to any Wilde propaganda here.
Dinosaur sympathizers trying to not consume it.
Well, we're getting it out of the way in 2022.
So
that you don't have to consume it in 2023. But he sits down and Olivia Wilde kind of looks over at him like, "Are you fucking for real?" But she's trying to smile. Everyone's trying to keep this this facade up, but she looks at him like, "For real?" And he looks over at her and he smiles and he waves and he does this kind of head nod like, "Yeah." And then he pulls out his phone and leans back and it's kind of this thing like, "Yeah, fuck you," that he does. And I love, it's this like subtle little thing that's like, something's going, they were fighting. That's why Chris Pine's sitting between them.
Yeah.
Maybe that was, they'd already broken up and they had a big bad fight before the thing. And
we don't know.
Maybe she boned Pine, dude. Maybe she got on that incredible Pine dick and he knew about it. And so Pine got a lap full of
spit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But I don't want to contribute to any Wilde propaganda.
I just wanted to get it all out.
Yeah.
Before. Anyway, so Dinosaur Synthesizer just says we don't want to consume any Wilde propaganda or be so. And then this, I always know what kind of person I'm dealing with if they use this word, willy-nilly. Just uses the R slur.
Or be
so that word that I allow Big Pharma to inject me with polymers because I'm convinced it's the right thing to do. So this is a person who doesn't want to listen to any propaganda and thinks that people who get vaccines are idiots. Because they're allowing Big Pharma to inject us with things that are going to wipe out the population.
I guess that's their resolution.
And I support them.
Yeah.
I do.
I mean, here's the thing. You're getting polymers inside you. I'm sorry to tell you, bud. You're getting polymers in you. You can't avoid them. Polymers? Are you kidding me?
You're trying to get polymers?
It's literally one of the most common things to get in you.
Especially from a syringe.
Especially from a syringe or Big Pharma. Yeah right?
And if you
drink a Sprite. You know how many polymers are in that? So many polymers. I don't actually know.
The FDA does not require them to put the polymer count
They don't put the polymer count on the nutrition label. You're getting polymers. You're getting polymers for the new year, my friend.
Whether you like it or
whether
not.
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah, and you're probably going to get some Wilde propaganda as
You're going to get a little bit of Olivia Wilde propaganda, and you're going to get some polymers in your body.
Good luck.
Good luck. And if you're lucky, you'll get the good polymers. Because there's some good ones out there.
I love that. I love that stuff. I love when people are like, I don't want to be a person who just believes everything I'm told. That's why I think that the Earth is flat. It's like,
but who told you that?
Hold on.
Yeah. We got a lot of flat Earth people. I used to work in science museums, and that was a big thing at one point where we had to do we developed a training, me and some of my other coworkers, for managing experiences with conspiracy theorists that came in specifically to elicit a kind of argument. Sometimes it was casual, but they were there to make a scene. So we had to run through like all right, how do you engage with someone like this? What is the, you know, how should you be considerate of them? You're also, we're also a science institution. We're not turning people away, but also trying to have a dialogue that's not combative or makes people feel awful leaving it, and also keeping everybody safe, because there is an element of safety there as well.
And a dialogue that doesn't, like, legitimize what they're trying to bring to the conversation too much. That's, like, being clear that it's, like, hey, you like, we don't live in a terrarium.
It's a very hard, difficult balance of trying to not legitimize misinformation, but also not drive someone further into that. And if you are, especially if you are representing an institution, like a science institution, they're already seeing you as not a human being. They're seeing you as an authority that represents whatever that entity is.
You're
that
a lizard
you,
person. Work
for. You're a lizard person, you know, metaphorically or literally in their minds. So, and then also, like, as far as a lot of conspiracy theories go, a lot of them are linked to death anxiety, where it's like seeing some, that's why you see a lot of it come from big horrific events, 9/11, Titanic sinking, assassinations, those kind of things, where because of these horrible things happen and they can, and people can die at any time from this. If you can understand the conspiracy around it, that's a way of psychologically protecting yourself from being hurt or killed by this thing. So if then you challenge someone's conspiracy theory, you're in their brain, you're trying to dismantle the defense structure they put up to keep themselves safe. And so it's a threat. You're attacking them.
Wow.
So you're like, and so it oftentimes leads to that. You know, I'm not a psychiatrist or anything like that, but those were the things that we were looking up, and that made sense to me, where I'm like, yeah, that makes sense, where you're a human being, you look for patterns, you want, when there's a big threat out there that you feel like it is, you know, COVID for one, people are dying, trying to understand that and understand and seeing a pattern where there is not one, and linking your safety to it, I think is, yeah. Anyway, that's,
I'd never heard that before. That is so fascinating. Honestly, I've never heard that before, that it's linked to death anxiety, which is something that, like, that's another big thing for me this year. I've been dealing with death anxiety all year long. Like, I think I have been my entire life, but I've really realized it this year. Like, I was on TikTok one day and I was watching a video of, they were interviewing people who were, like, my age who had terminal illnesses, and just, like, asking them about, like, how they're dealing with, and, like, what it was like when they first heard that they had, like, 6 months to live, you know, and what their lives look like knowing that they're in the last days. Mm-hmm. And I was filled with such a dread watching the video. I was like, I started feeling, like, overwhelmed with anxiety watching it. And then I started thinking, like, what is that about? And it's like, oh, I'm not, it's 'cause I don't like the idea that at my age I could, I'm liable to get a surprise cancer diagnosis any old day, or, you know, or a brain tumor.
You can die at any time for any reason, and there's not a lot of control we have over it. And I don't know. Coming to that realization, it's hard to face.
I had to unpack it and be like, what is it about it that scares me? Like, why? Because, like, obviously I've known this is the inevitable conclusion my entire life. But I think it's linked to feeling like, not yet. Like, I haven't done what I'm supposed to do. I haven't, like, accomplished enough thing. And this, I think, is also linked to resolutions. Hey, Emma, that's enough. You knock it off. Come here. But I think this is tied to resolutions too, is like, we're always trying to improve. We're like, there's always a goal. There's always something that we're hoping to do, something that we have not done yet, have not achieved yet. And I think that that's where a lot of death anxiety comes from for me, is the feeling like,
if I die now, I won't have accomplished the thing that I wanted to get done with my life.
Right. I'm not ready to say, to put a period at the end of this story yet and say, that's enough. I did enough. That's good enough. You know?
Yeah.
But man, I hadn't considered the conspiracy theory thing being linked. That's fantastic. Yeah,
I don't think it's every conspiracy theorist by any means, but I think a lot of that's definitely a part of it for sure.
See, that's why the flat earth thing to me is I think it's the, it is the apex conspiracy theory. Cause I think one thing that characterizes a lot of them is like the inability to verify one way or the other. It's like no one can actually verify whether or not there are certain people who are lizard people who change it, you know, who shapeshift into lizards. Like there'd just be no way for us to actually quantifiably empirically verify that other than just the lack of evidence for a claim like that. But and there's so many claims that it's like we're never probably ever going to know what actually happened on the day that JFK was shot. Like we just might never get.
Oh, that. I do, but I ain't telling.
I figured you might.
I'm not telling anybody.
you're like, it was Lee Harvey Oswald.
it was just Lee Harvey Oswald. Yeah, that's it.
I like the theory that a Secret Service agent, while he was jumping up to help, like someone was shooting from somewhere, and a Secret Service agent, while he was jumping up to help, his gun misfired and he shot the president through the back of the head and they didn't want to say we accidentally shot the president, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah,
that would suck.
But you know, these are things that you can't actually verify. The flat earth thing, I'm just like, hey, just go to the edge. Just go to the edge. Just
if you think there's an edge, go to the edge.
Just go to the edge. Just that's all you got to do. Yeah. That's just get in a boat and just sail until you hit the ice wall. Or whatever it is that you're supposed
sail
to
sail around Antarctica. I don't know.
Yeah, like just go and film the edge. Like,
yeah,
it's verifiable. And if you go in one direction and you wind up but where you started,
you don't even need to go that far.
I
to
know
verify,
you don't.
And you know that there's always going to be the goalpost that's going to move.
Of course.
Because it's not necessarily about proving it. I don't know.
Right. But it's like you could put it to bed. You could close the door on it and go, done. Yeah. We did it. I went to the edge and I knocked on the glass wall of the terrarium. You know?
Like if there's an edge, let's see it. Yeah. Although there was the flat earth, wasn't there a flat earth guy who tried to launch himself in a rocket recently and died in a rocket?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Died by rocket.
Well, they're always trying to prove it in really like dumb ways too.
Like putting like a Home Depot level on the horizon or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really. Yeah. Where it's just like, well, that's not.
That's not really. You're also looking at the horizon. You know how the ships go down?
Yeah. 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 You're looking at the line.
Oh, that's the ethereal winds that is doing that. Okay. but yeah. It's, yeah, the flat earth stuff is interesting. The guy who kind of created the modern flat earth stuff with the what is it, that channel experiment? Yeah, where he's like, noticed that the length of seeing the flag from a distance along this very flat channel of water, and then challenged anyone to like prove him wrong, that his experiment was wrong, and like a surveyor came in and was like, yeah, you have to take an account for like the moisture in the air on the just above the water.
Yeah, it's not hard.
And he's like, just do it from like up here and then you'll see that the curve actually does block your view. And they had like a bet, and then the flat earth guy tried to kill that guy. So,
oh my God. I don't know if I heard that story.
Yeah, that's... I think so. I think that's how it went down. I don't know.
Jesus,
it's been a while
Christ.
Since I
oh my
looked
God.
Into it.
Yeah. Somebody here on YouTube, Nora says, I was 31 when I got diagnosed with breast cancer. It makes it all super real. I mean, God, 31, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I have ketamine experience, medical, which I know a lot of people who have gotten a lot of help from that, which helped my death anxiety a ton. It's been a year and a half, and I'm still struggling to come to terms with the fact that I can't handle my treatment, but dissociative drugs help me a lot with existential issues. I mean, yeah, it's like that. I think about that just like even if I got a diagnosis where they were like, yeah, we have a treatment plan for you, I'd be like, oh, God, but what? What am I signing up for? And how long? And this is going to be, it's going to take over just everything in my life. Like,
yeah, it's a mess. It's not
Well, one of my resolutions is to not get cancer this year.
Yeah, I hope you sorry, Nora. Complete that one. Yeah.
I'm going to try to go for at least just one more year. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in my head a lot. My dad had cancer when I was a kid, and he's good now. He had a bone marrow transplant and is cancer-free.
Where was it?
The cancer?
Yeah,
or,
the cancer.
He had lymphoma.
Okay.
So, yeah. The
lymph nodes. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and then went into remission and then decided while it was in remission to go do the bone marrow transplant, which was relatively new as a treatment at the time. And the University of Minnesota was one of the few places that was doing it. Luckily, we lived in Minneapolis, so we were, like, right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that procedure's crazy because they give you a new immune system, basically, you know, and so then you have to worry about getting killed by like a cold or, you know,
yeah,
because you're building up this immunity and yeah.
My friend Chris just said on YouTube, DMT definitely nicks the death anxiety too, though it brings about its own. Have you heard about this? Like people, you know, DMT,
yeah.
Like, Neil Brennan talked about this in his latest special. Did you see his special Blocks on Netflix?
I did not. No.
Oh,
is it good?
Do you like Neil Brennan?
I'm not. Maybe I'm not.
He's
that
stand-up comedian.
He's okay. Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. But he talked about how all the different things that he's done in his life for his mental health. He's really struggled with his mental health in his life, and he's done
yeah.
a lot of things. He's done a lot of different treatments. Mm-hmm. And at one point, he's like, I even did some DMT. To try, he's like, and I think I might have done some damage with that. Like he said that, he was like, I might have like hurt myself.
Yeah.
But I've heard from people that it can help because it takes you to a place where like, which is like apparently like the, you know, like the creation box of the universe or whatever, like the,
yeah,
the field of.
Makes you
source.
Feel like you're dead.
Yeah.
Or pre-born.
Yeah. So you get to like see it, but then you're mm-hmm. also like, okay, I guess there it is.
Yeah.
But also like, I don't understand that at all. So that gives me another anxiety of like, what was that?
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, I was sledding and right kind of at the base of the hill, I hit this big ice patch and I flipped out of the sled and I cracked the back of my head on the ice and it knocked me out. And I remember forgetting like who I was, or I was just in darkness and I forgot that I existed as a person. And then when I woke up, I saw my parents standing over me. And I remember having a thought, oh yeah, I have parents. And that's how I remembered that I was like, I existed.
I think that's what people, yeah. That's similar to a DMT experience as far mm-hmm. as what I've heard is that like you forget like what you are or like what like yeah. existence is.
Yeah.
And so you're like in a place where you're like, I was there, but I wasn't I wasn't like a,
you had no sense of,
I was just yeah. like. Somewhere else, and it was almost as though I'd always been there,
yeah,
and I had no uh-huh. sense of like arrival or yeah. like departure. But then when you come back, you're like, oh, that's right, I just did drugs, and that's like, uh-huh. oh, that's yeah. yeah. I had experience like that on salvia, which is like a legal thing that you can.
Oh, I know. Yeah, you know, salvia.
Yeah, I did. I went away to some place that like once I was there, I had always been there, and
yeah.
I had no concept of like. Me or not being there, and then when I came back, I was like, "Oh, drugs! That's right."
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. Drugs made you feel that way. Yeah.
I was like, "Yeah,
uh-huh. Yeah." The brain is, altered your brain chemistry for a little bit temporarily.
It's such a trip to know that you mm-hmm. that you can just like inhale a fume into your lungs, and then the way that it will interact with the chemicals in your brain will make you. Go to another dimension
yeah.
for and exist there for a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was, non-existing after that sledding incident, I don't remember. It wasn't scary at all. It was just kind of like, oh, it was peaceful. I don't know. It was calming.
Sure.
But I don't know. That might not be death at all. I just probably just knocked my
And then Jesus was there.
And I saw Jesus, and he seemed upset about something, so I didn't want to talk to him. No, he wasn't there. And it was just darkness.
He said, Christianity is a lie.
Yeah, he's like, hey, Christianity is a fucking lie, you know? I was just a guy, and I'm dead. I'm here, too.
I'm here, too. I don't know what the fuck is going on. Anyway, are there any resolutions that we left off that you had that you wanted to talk about?
Resolutions that we left off? I'm getting more into cooking, so I'm going to cook some more. I made my mom's scone recipe for Christmas.
Oh.
This year. And
how'd they turn out? Great.
Good. It was really easy.
Yeah.
I've been baking bread. Everybody did that in the pandemic and I didn't. And now I'm getting into it. And I'm like, man, it's really easy.
I didn't do that.
Yeah. You didn't do the baking phase.
No, I'm not a good cook or baker.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No. I don't think I'm that good of a cook. I like when I start to make at least the extra effort to not be such a slob with the food that I consume. And if you're a single person like me, it's harder because you're not cooking. Recipes are always for multiple people, and I like cooking for other people more than I like cooking for myself. So. It's hard.
I think that's the problem is that mm-hmm. I'm a single man and I live in this place by myself and I don't often have company over to cook for. And if I did have people over, I would probably just order something. I don't know. Although I had people over for Christmas the other night, Christmas brunch. I can do that. I can make a main breakfast and I made everybody breakfast. And it was nice.
I love a good breakfast.
Hey, so where can people find you and follow you online? What do you got going
Absolutely. On? Absolutely. Things that I got going on. TikTok, obviously. That's at Little Victorian Boy.
You guys really, you want to follow Little Victorian Boy if you're not already. You really please, want to.
Please do. Instagram, at Little Victorian Boy. YouTube/ Little Victorian Boy. I'm on there as well. And then I have the Little Victorian Boy podcast, which you can get other places, which is
there we go.
Is just story. I do like a short story. It's usually like a little creepy, haunted short story piece. And I have my Patreon subscribers throw me suggestions and come up with stories for that. Yeah.
God, I got to listen to that. That sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I think those are my big things. And then if you're in Los Angeles, the first Wednesday of every month, I'm on a sketch team called Corduroy and we perform, with the Pack Theater. So you can look that up.
Hey, there you go.
If you want to swing by. Yeah. Those are fun.
There you go. Love it. Fantastic. Colin, thanks so much
for coming over
and hanging out in the studio and chatting with me about resolutions and death anxiety and conspiracy theories and wild propaganda.
We love it.
Yeah. Yep. All right, man.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks everybody in the comments for, you know, participating and being so active. Really, really appreciate y'all. That's it. Okay. We'll see you on the next one. Love you. We'll see you in the new year. Have a good time. Be safe. If you do DMT, just come back and let everyone know how it was. I'm sure you will. If you do salvia, be careful. Be careful sledding. You don't want to hit your head.
No.
And, yeah. Okay. I think that's all the things. Maybe get a New Year's kiss in there. Or don't. Whatever. Fuck that. You don't have to get a kiss. You know? Unless you have a partner and you want a kiss. That's fine. But if you don't have one, that's also fine. Right?
It's fine, but you deserve a kiss.
Let's you just deserve say that. A kiss. You should get a little kiss. Okay. All right. Bye-bye, guys. Love ya. Wanting something to be right so much you push it from your life is the thing, though. If anyone is gonna stay. So that's it. That's all she wrote. That's it. That's it for 2022. That's it for all the podcasts this year. We had a bunch of good ones. I'll see you in the new year. No podcast next week. I'm going to be too busy and important being a big time music video director. And, I'll see you after I'm done with that. Okay. All right. Hey, we did good. Thanks for hanging with me. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, austin-archer.com, looking up Austin Archer on Spotify, Apple Music, or some other service that you might use, like YouTube Music or Amazon Music or something like that. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Come on over there. Come on over. One of my resolutions is to try to be better to my Patreon patrons. They are so good to me, and they have been so supportive of me and my content and my journey, and I need to do more things for them. That's one of my resolutions, is to be better about curating my Patreon page and the Patreon experience for my patrons. So head on over there, patreon.com/AustinArcher, and thank you to all of my patrons again for another just wonderfully generous year. I love you so much. Hey, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, have a safe and happy New Year's Eve celebration. We'll see you on the next one. Love you so much. Bye-bye. I know.